Previously, on the Stack Exchange podcast.
If we ever fire Alex, can we do it on air?
Oh, you're so fired.
Wait, is Alex really fired?
On this episode.
No, I like the idea of where we just, Alex's voice is never heard again, and we just refer to him as gone. Don't really explain what happened.
Gone quiet.
Quiet.
Yeah, if you look really closely at this, you can see like a picture of him blindfolded.
Quietly,
and
right,
chair.
Quietly imply that he's been disciplined.
Okay, vous écoutez le podcast Stack Exchange, Edmonton de New York, the Stack Exchange podcast, episode 55, recorded on Friday the 13th, Thursday, February 13th, 2014 this year, Friday the 13th, on Thursday is even worse. This episode of Stack Exchange podcast is brought to you by the city of Sochi, Russia, on the shores of the Black Sea. The city attracts vacation goers with its subtropical vegetation, numerous parks, monuments, and extravagant Stalinist architecture. Sochi, remember, the Black Sea is not actually black. On the show today, Jay Hanlon, David Fullerton, and I'm your host, Joel Spolsky. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Good morning.
Episode 55. It's been like 4 months since the last one that we did.
It has been long.
Quite a gap.
But now, just like the last, every time we do one, we're like, now we're going to do them every week.
No. Every week?
No, we are going to.
Every 2 weeks?
It actually is different this time because we have a competent producer.
We are actually going to do. We do? We do have a producer, Abby.
Hello.
Replacing ex-producer, Alex.
We don't talk about him.
No, he's been replaced.
He's actually tied up in the corner, tied to a chair. Duct tape over his mouth.
Gaff tape.
We wish him luck in his future endeavors, not scheduling someone else's podcast, I assume. So a lot's happened.
Has it?
We have a lot to talk about.
Okay,
we're actually
going
to skip most of it, and so you won't know what happened for a big chunk of time.
Let's go to, letters from the editor. Letters to the editor.
Dear Joel.
Yeah.
We don't actually have any letters from the editor, but we have lots of new sites, site milestones. I'm really just going to gloss over most of these. We'll circle back.
Well, they can't be that important.
There's so many.
New sites?
Sites, yeah.
Really?
We haven't talked in a very long time.
Do we make websites?
We do make webs. In between making delicious spiced ham.
Yes.
I would like to correct. We don't make websites. We make communities.
That's true.
You want to hear the most obscure joke in the world? Somebody asked me why we made...
Sure we do.
...a Portuguese site before we made a Spanish site.
Is this a Polish joke?
And it turns out the reason is because it was based on the winner of the 2013 Confederations Cup was Bill.
Oh, that's actually...
So that includes a Stack Overflow site when you win that soccer match.
It's one of the lesser known components of the prize, like a trophy, I imagine, or a ring.
Right, you get a trophy, a ring.
What
the sports
people get.
Get a hotel
like
built in your city. And
is that true?
I'm not really sure, but
and
things like that.
A translation of Stack Overflow.
You get the first translation of Stack Overflow.
That's really the, I mean, that, maybe it's not yet, but that's going to become the biggest prize.
In the long run, you're going to see essentially Spain decline and Portugal.
That's right. Then. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, our network's already bigger than some countries that compete in the cup.
So we'll come back to which countries we are better than. But I'd like to.
Wait, what?
Is that not what you said? I might have misheard you. I don't mean our country. I mean which countries our company is better than.
Our company.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the Portuguese site, but I think let's quickly just talk about. Let's share with Joel in case you haven't been paying attention. We have a bunch of new sites that launched. I think since we. I don't think we talked about pets, which feels weird, but I think we didn't. It was after we last talked.
Really?
Any particular pets?
It's any pets. We have a site.
Siberian Huskies, actually.
For
mostly.
Pet owners.
Let me guess. Is it pets.stackexchange.com?
It is.
Can we buy stackexchange.cm, whatever the heck that is, Cameroon? It goes somewhere. A bunch of ads.
What, you typed it wrong once and now it keeps
forget, though.
Auto-completing to that?
Why is my cat so interested in me making the bed? I don't know.
That's an excellent...
It's an interesting question. The question is technically, why is my cat so interested? Yeah. Isn't that why are cats interested?
Yeah, and that actually belongs on our feline cognitive science site. It would be a better fit, probably, for that particular question.
The first answer does start out with a caveat. I cannot provide a definitive explanation.
For why your cat does this. So pets rolled out. Pets had a very strong participation out of the gate. Still doing pretty well. One thing I think it is one of those places where I think a lot of people have pets, love pets, have issues with their pets. I'm not sure there's a ton of people who want to talk about their pets every day or every other day. So we'll
I should ask
see.
The question about eating grass. Has that been on there yet? Because I often use that as an example why the internet. Ooh, they have it.
You're wrong, Jay. We talked about pets
we did talk
in
about
podcast
that.
53.
You know what? It was not in the notes. Which I think
it
at the
is
time,
in the notes. I just went to the blog and Googled pets.
I'm going
and
to continue
that.
To deny it, even though you're looking at it right in front of you on the internet, because I don't believe in that. Let's stop talking about pets. We talked about this already. Weird.
This is strange.
See, we're really out of shape. This is embarrassing.
Pets did actually technically come
I actually
out
read the transcript. All right, we're done with pets. That was a good talk. Other sites we've rolled out since then, we launched an Italian language site for people trying to learn to speak Italian, which seems to have pretty good quality, but is extraordinarily slow. So not clear we're going to have kind of sufficient engagement. We're hopeful. They seem to be working hard, the people who are there, but there's not that much activity. We launched an ebook site. I personally thought this was among the dumbest non-topics I had ever heard. I believe there would be two questions, and the answer to one of them would be use the EPUB format. Yeah. I don't know what the other one was, but I was pretty sure there was only one.
Only one question about ebooks.
But I was wrong. That site actually has had pretty solid participation throughout. There's a group of people both on the enthusiast and sort of the publishing side who have a lot of questions.
Okay, ebooks.stackexchange.com. Next.
We launched a beer site.
This is not the first time we have tried to make a beer site.
This is a different beer site.
Okay. No, that we have a homebrew site.
Correct.
Homebrew is different than beer.
What do you brew when you brew it?
Homebrew is about brewing your own beer. Beer is about consuming beer, which may or may not be homebrew.
Ah, to hell with it all. I quit. That's it. That's it. I'm out of here. It's over. Shut this down.
It's weird. You'd think he'd be drinking a beer right now, but he's not.
He probably like wouldn't beer, have had that obviously. Reaction if he had been drinking a beer.
So launch the beer site. I think there remains a question. One thing we talked about a whole lot, there was a sense that this community kind of needed its own space. I'm still a little bit curious as to whether homebrew and beer don't have an enormous overlap. It's not always the same topic, but I think the people interested in one tend to be interested in the other. But we're keeping a close eye on them. We launched a relationships and dating Stack Exchange.
Oh, yeah.
Don't try and type anything because it is no longer there. But it was...
The relationship ended abruptly.
Yeah, there were a lot of amusing sort of accidental jokes as they sent updates to the community team saying relationships and dating has entered the commitment phase and things like this. But relationships and dating was one of these sites that...
Okay, that's not funny.
It's kind of funny.
You know what? Let's just interrupt right now and I'll tell you about some other podcasts you can download that I like to listen to sometimes. There's the Adam Carolla podcast I would highly recommend. Freakonomics Radio is good. Le Rendezvous Tech, if you want to learn podcast words in French. This Week in Startups, This Week in Tech is good. This American Life is interesting. You have to set your podcast program to download every episode.
You're literally reading a list of other podcasts.
Just the ones that I recommend because this one is so bad.
You listen to a lot of podcasts.
Relationships and dating, I think, was interesting. We're trying to...
Yeah, it was hopeless because you know why it was hopeless? Because our format doesn't work when anyone can answer any question.
I'm not sure that's what made this fail. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure I 100% agree. We thought this site would be hard. To be honest, I think they did about as good a job of it as I think was probably possible. We kind of hoped they would surprise us with something we hadn't thought of that would really make it work well. Mm-hmm. I think the fundamental problem here is not so much that. And I think we often get distracted and confused when we say, you know what? Well, there's lots of right answers. Well, we're good at things that have lots of right answers, I think, often. There isn't. There are often right answers that are more demonstrably useful or applicable than others.
Not in relationships and dating.
Well, I think...
It's almost like nutrition. If we had a site about nutrition, it'd be awesome because there's like absolutely no science behind nutrition.
Right. Nutrition is one of those things that everyone has a theory on and no one has tested any of them successfully.
Yeah. And Last night, my husband and my sister got into an interesting argument in which I was pointing out, did you see there's like a funny picture of... There's a gigantic snow apocalypse in Atlanta, Georgia. They had like a dusting of snow or something, so they had to shut down the state. So, meanwhile, we've got like 15 inches and our schools are open. Yeah.
Schools are open. Build
a blizzard. But in Atlanta, there was a dusting of snow and they had a little bit of the first time, they all crashed their cars and had to walk home from the highway, which was almost impossible for...
We had a developer trapped in his car for hours in Atlanta.
I know, yes. It sounds horrible.
It sounds like a Walking Dead episode. It snowed, right?
That's what happened. It was like 2 inches of snow, too.
Yeah. Anyway, they don't have salt and shovels and stuff. Because it never snows down there. So anyway.
Who doesn't have salt?
For the second snowstorm, everybody just decided to stay home and stock up. And there were pictures of the shelves in a grocery store, which had been stripped bare of all the white bread, but not the whole wheat bread. Which I thought was pretty funny picture and highly representative of Georgia. And Jared said, why is that funny? And my sister said, well, because the whole wheat bread is healthier. And he's like, no,
oh,
it
no.
isn't. Here and she says, what? Jared said to my sister, go find me one piece of scientific proof that white bread is in any way less healthy than whole wheat or whole grain or 12 grain or whatever.
But whole wheat tastes so much worse. It has to be healthier.
Wait, I actually
it does taste worse. I agree
with
that.
I'm not going to argue this so much as mention that I've perhaps been tricked by these pseudoscience. I thought about the two things that they had actually some decent science backing was that eating more plants than most of us do actually leads to long-term
whole wheat
better health.
Does not have plants.
And less processed.
More whole grains. I thought that more fiber and whole grains also, that's a meaningful, measurable. But there's only two things there was. No, is that?
There's absolutely, when you read any literature about anything in nutrition, there is nothing that could be considered a scientifically reasonable controlled experiment with enough participants that removes all other factors that actually tells you anything that
Although, something I heard.
That was Jared's claim, at
the
least.
The gauntlet has been thrown down for our podcast listeners to try to find the study.
Go on Skeptics and say, is it true that there's absolutely no information about nutrition?
Is the entire field of nutrition a giant scam?
It really is. It's completely bogus. You can find studies that prove that you should eat, you know, anything.
Okay.
Motor oil.
So who won the argument? Did they fight?
Yeah, well, they just decided to change it to boxing, so they went outside
fisty
in the
cuffs.
Snow and boxed.
Fisticuffs.
So, in summary,
I'm not taking a side.
We still think we're better than everyone in Georgia for no good reason.
Well, because we know how to drive in the snow. That's a big part of it.
There's going to be people going hungry because they would not eat whole wheat.
So anyway,
I'm sure that's what's happening.
That kind of conflict is just the kind of thing that can make it difficult when you're in a relationship or dating.
Oh.
Anyway, I think the challenge there, the topic is soft, and we were afraid it would devolve. It didn't devolve so much as I think there's not a natural community. It's hard to envision in the long term who are the people that are going to be kind of regularly on this site talking to each other, providing sort of guidance and expertise. The place where we kind of dreamed it maybe could go that'd be helpful is getting into, you know, I get into this scenario or interaction regularly with, you know, my wife, my partner, and I feel like I approach it like this, where there actually is pretty good sort of, this gets a little more cognitive stuff, better ways to approach and respond. It's a hard topic. It doesn't draw in the kind of people, I think, who have naturally had a lot of experience. The people on it were actually, I thought, working really hard and did a good job. It's just a hard, we didn't think it would fit. We really wanted to give them a try, but it wasn't a good fit. But I think along that theme.
You can use Secret. It's a little app you can download for your iPhone. If you have questions about relationships, just go on Secret and say, you know, and just type your question. You get a bunch of answers from.
It's like Jelly.
No, we're not going to. We cannot talk about Secret. We just can't.
Okay. It's only got 1 week. It's going to be gone in a week. So
like the not safe for work jelly? I don't know anything
secret,
about this.
It's like one.
It's like a little Twitter, but what you post are secrets. Here, I'll read you one. Startups are really hard. Oh, that's terrible.
It only goes to
secret?
It goes to your friends only or your friends of friends. So it's not just like post secret where someone like random is like, I murdered my wife 6 years ago.
Whoa.
It's somebody you know.
You murdered your wife six years ago?
No, that was an example where somebody says that.
Okay.
My wife's fine, I think. I'm nervous. Anyway,
maybe you've just been imagining
says
all
I might
the
be
years
having a baby.
Then.
This is very unexpected.
It is extremely unlikely you're having a baby, Joel.
No, no. One of my friends has posted on Secret, I might be having a baby. This is very unexpected.
But you
I think
don't
by
know
friend,
which friend
it means somebody that's in my phone book.
It could be anybody.
Curious. I know.
Now you're going to start going through your phone book and eliminating people that couldn't.
No, I got thousands of people that I haven't talked to in years that I just stuck on there. Random people that I met once got their business card. That's the trouble. It's not really my friends.
We have this in our liner notes that someone who may or may not be Joel's friend may or may not be pregnant.
Yeah, now it's not really a secret anymore.
We do
anymore.
Also noted that your wife is fine.
Very
okay,
public
oh, excellent,
now.
Excellent.
Well,
okay.
No, they don't know who it is. And the secret app uses some kind of... All right, we're not going to talk about secret anymore.
So, back to sites. So, I think relationships and dating is one good example of the kind of thing I think we tend to think we're not good at or is just hard to make work as a site in our system, and that was correct.
Wasn't, you know, it's very much like parenting.
You know, I don't want to get too bogged down. I actually want to talk about parenting in depth maybe next time or the time after.
While we're on the subject of the family-oriented
sites. Parenting is a good site that isn't attracting enough activity, in my opinion. But don't go there now and try and dispute that. We'll do it next time.
That would be parenting. That's
we have too much to talk about.
Please visit.
What I do want to talk about, though, is software recommendations. And that is a site that will be in public beta by the time this airs. It's still in private beta today, but we've already...
Software Rex.
Software Rex.exchange. And I think something
not
that,
like Rex, like T-Rex.
No, yeah. Or like
prescription RX.
Yeah. Yes.
Software recommendations is, I think, an interesting site because it speaks to something that is a regular need that users have that they try to pursue on our other sites, and particularly on Stack Overflow. So over the years, kind of different types of recommendation questions have been made off topic on Stack Overflow. Mm-hmm. Initially, kind of, I think one of the earliest ones was people who just said, which blah, blah, blah should I buy? I'm trying to get a chair or a keyboard or what's the best one? And over the years, more and more recommendation type things became off topic. So one of the ones that actually I personally wish were still allowed on Stack Overflow, the community really kind of worked through it, is even library recommendations now. So if you're looking for a really obscure library that does a certain thing, when you're not sure if one exists out there that meets your criteria, one of those places where Stack Overflow probably has someone that exists who's encountered it and could point you towards it that you might not find in a search. But all these questions over time, as the site grew, had a couple of problems. So one is they're very easy to ask. They attract a lot of activity and sort of copycats. One is the answers can be very opinion-based. So if the question is, what is the best blah, right? Everyone can have an opinion. There's really no way to rank them. And the other is the site got really big, I think, is spam is increasingly a problem. It's one of those things where the amount of spam that some things can attract is hard to moderate on a massive site, on a massive scale. But at the end of the day, I think topics like that are things that we actually, when we have a good community, would be better at than most other places on the internet. So if you could go on Stack Overflow and say, I'm looking to buy a keyboard and I want it to meet these criteria, the keys need to be not too clacky and it needs to have function keys and it's got to be backlit and this and that, it's the right place. And the answers would be ranked by the right people, but it would clutter up the site and cause a lot of problems. And so I think on Stack Overflow, they really needed, in many cases, to be made off topic. Other sites in the past haven't done that. And so a couple of examples on the bicycle site, on a lot of the sites like that, if you ask a very specific question, I'm looking for, photography is a great example, a camera that does this, this, and this, you know, less than this aperture, et cetera, and they allow it, and it works pretty well. Software Rex is interesting because it's sort of this specific one that was made unavailable to people because Stack Overflow didn't want it, and that would be the natural place to put it. And it's done really well out of the gate. So the activity's been pretty strong. We've been watching it really closely.
Yeah. We were having a conversation about that yesterday, and I think one of the things we thought is, first of all, we don't want it to turn into the kind of site that everybody posts questions at, but nobody really wants to hang out at.
Right.
Like the real question is, like, who likes to sit around on a site just kind of answering random questions? Which actually led us to a more interesting conversation, coincidentally related, which is, did you ever look into more depth what we talked about yesterday, which is what percentage of answers that are written on Stack Overflow were written by somebody that just came in as a result of a Google search, which we actually looked at?
Yeah, I'm still scared this is wrong.
It's surprisingly high. Well, look.
Well, we can start with what we found initially. We're digging
this
deeper.
This number can't possibly be correct. Yeah. I heard this story too.
Yeah, so the Google Analytics, the Google Analytics slice we looked at seems to say that of the answers that are posted on Stack Overflow, roughly 50% of those answers are posted by someone who arrived at the Stack Overflow property, not necessarily that page, obviously. It actually couldn't be that page. Oh, no, it could be that page. But on Stack Overflow via a Google search. So that half of our answers come from someone who Googled and got here and then answer a question.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little bit different than saying that they Googled for that question and then answered it from there. Because that might just mean that even our regulars are spending time on the site after Googling. That could mean your session started by you got a question, you Google, you get the answer, and then you decide to browse around and find something to answer.
Well, here's something that I think will give us more confidence that that's a real number, which is that 90%+ of our traffic comes from people looking at questions on Google. It's not surprising that a large percentage of the answers are written by people that came in with the other 90%+ of the people. Like they arrived, if you have a door, 90% of the people came through there, and there's a bunch of people wandering around inside your site. It would not be surprising if the people that actually do the answering of the questions are the ones that came through that door that most people arrived from.
Yeah. If it's just the beginning of the session, I could believe it. I would find it very unlikely that people are Googling for a question, landing on it, and then deciding to answer that question.
Well, that's because
I'm sure that happens sometimes, but that's...
I think that you're thinking of it not statistically enough. Like you're thinking of it more specifically, like I have a very precise, exact question, and I want to find the answer to it because I do not know it, and I go on Stack Overflow and I find it, then you're certainly not going to write the answer to that question because you didn't know it. That's why you're searching for it. So that's what you're thinking of, David. But actually, in reality, I think what's happening is that there's just sort of some probability. You put some keywords in your Google search. You've landed on some question that uses those keywords. You may very well, you're actually, in fact, maybe even more likely, you've landed on something that's in the same general zip code is your question, but it's not exactly your question. And because it's so close to your question, it's something you're working on that you happen to know how to answer.
Yeah, so you don't know about that. I don't buy that that's 50%. I would be surprised if just people who found the question to answer from the homepage
is
shockingly high.
Why would you make a chocolate
brand? Just discovered for our listeners a bowl of chocolate that somebody foolishly placed in the middle of the podcasting table.
Who left things in front of Joel?
It was inevitable that at some point Joel's eye would land on the shiny thing.
You pass
and
pass me
would
that
be
ivory, ivory chocolate over there.
So we're digging deeper into this. One of the things we don't
have ivory. How about palm olive?
This is our new monetization strategy where Joel trashes some brand until they pay us. We're still experimenting. I don't know if it's going to work out. We're digging deeper into this. We would really like to understand better, I think, what gets people to that. I'm kind of with David. It still seems a little bit hard to believe that someone who is Googling to solve some problem stopped trying to solve that problem and started answering other questions at that moment, as much as this implies. But you're right that the base case of just how many people come through Google.
Well, it's just a Google search, too. It could be people searching Stack Overflow to get on the site and looking at.
They're like, I wonder if there are any questions about dot, 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 which I know how to answer.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's not that. It's not so much that.
We got to look at how many come through the homepage.
I think we're completely misrepresenting what's going on the site.
So you know,
we can see how many click through from the homepage, and it's a lot. We've looked at that before, and it's a large percentage of the questions that get answered come from a click from the homepage. I don't remember what the number is, but
what's interesting about what you just said, David, is I wonder if there's a big lump of this that, because I'm thinking you Google and you're landing like on your error message or some question that sounds like it. I wonder if there's a lot of people who just type Stack Overflow into the bar instead of stackoverflow.com, wind up on Google.
It's always the number one. Your number one search term is your own name.
In any case, software recommendations has been, I think, it's interesting because it is something that we've always said just doesn't work in our model. And I think a better way to reframe it is it got in the way of a lot of the kind of more core types of questions that we think are important that we can help with. And what it looks like to me is it's harder to do. The answers aren't always going to be perfectly ranked. But if you get the right group of people, I think like our audience is, we're making the wrong comparison when we say, is this as good or as accurate or as perfectly ranked as our other sites? Nope, it's a little more subjective. The better question is it better than what else is out there? And this is a very young site, which still has a small number of users already, to me, looks like that.
It's also just really small, right? And that's always been the thing. Even when Stack Overflow is small, we were okay with some of these questions. It becomes impossible when the site gets huge, because the number of people who want to ask one of these questions versus the number of people who want to answer, it just becomes unmanageable. And already there's a pretty high percentage of unanswered questions on this site.
Also still in private beta.
Yeah, but even among private betas, it's pretty normal to have, 99% answer rate.
Yeah, but I think that makes sense. Because they've been doing, I think, a pretty good job of asking sort of fairly specific questions, it calls for people with specific experience with the products. One of the things that we did in approaching this was thought a lot about how
25% unanswered.
Where these work and don't work. And Tim Post on the community side actually put up a couple things really kind of walking people through, like, if you want this to work, these need to be really specific cases where you can reasonably figure out that some answers are right and some are not. But it's interesting. We're going to keep a close eye on it. I think it's a compelling case that some of the things that we know didn't work that well in the midst of Stack Overflow aren't necessarily things we can't do better, I think, than the alternatives. They're just things that didn't work right there. And so this will be going to public beta before this airs.
Oh, you're such a bleeding heart liberal, Jay.
I'm a believer, man. I think everything's going to be great.
Everything on software recommendations to be shut down is off topic. Software recommendations are not allowed on this site.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at some real questions just to get a sense of it. And it still feels, it feels small, right?
Like
the one about, there's one.
They have 300 something. They have a lot of questions for a site this size.
It's getting a lot of activity, so that's good. But where was it? There was one about an image editor.
Plus, think how much stuff they're going to move over from Stack Overflow. Once this gets going, everybody's going to migrate the hell out of things.
Yeah, I think it raises an interesting question of, there's not a natural path for people right now, but people all the time come to Stack Overflow, try to get help with finding a library or a piece of software.
Right, and then we tell them to pound sand.
Exactly, and we say get lost. There's a whole internet where you can ask questions that won't get good answers.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It'll be interesting to see this develops. It'll be interesting to see over time if it becomes a thing that should be more visible maybe to Stack Overflow users. Certainly not mixing with the regular questions. That's exactly what went wrong. But anyway, I'm excited about it. I think these are good examples of sort of two things we thought we'd be bad at, and one we were bad at, and one we were not so bad at. So. Okay. Pretty exciting there.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that sort of didn't fit on Stack Overflow, I want to talk about our site of the week. This week is one that...
Wait, we have a...
That
first
Portuguese?
Of all,
no.
What week
Portuguese
are we talking about?
By week, I mean, 4 months.
Site of the 4 months.
Site of the 4 months. One site I want to talk about a little bit is Code Golf, and it connects nicely because it's another site where some people wanted to do a thing that Stack Overflow sort of resoundingly said, don't toss up crazy ideas for people to make here. We're actually trying to solve people's real problems.
Yeah.
And then Code Golf, eventually people said, well, we really want a place where we can set up a puzzle and someone can try to do it. And Joel's
making airplane flying signs.
Oh, didn't mention the aviation.
Aviation.
Site.
Oh my gosh, we skipped aviation. Aviation.
We already talked about that one.
Did we?
No.
I don't know. I don't think we did.
Definitely never talked about
it. No, we didn't talk about that.
Site.
I've just heard Joel talk about it so much that I'm...
Aviation launched a while back, and Aviation was a site that we were really excited about because it felt more like it fit sort of the things we're very good at. There's an extremely large number of different types of problems, right? There's all these different permutations with different aircraft, different regulations, different rules, and different situations. And while there's probably not quite as many as there are programming problems exactly, or maybe there are, it's one of those places where the expertise gets deep, it gets into dark corners. And so we were very, very excited about sort of a, there's a real, you have to have worked to have good answers on a site like this. So it's going really well. We've been really impressed overall with the quality of participation. The engagement level has been pretty high. We use this to actually, we're looking at trying to test out a little bit of, can we get some more of the kind of right kinds of experts to sites in ways we haven't before who aren't already on Stack Overflow. One interesting thing we found is aviation had a much, much higher overlap with programmers than we might have guessed. It was higher than a lot of other things that we thought would have more overlap. Mm-hmm. But we tried out a couple of, you know, little social experiments and things, which I think overall didn't, most of them didn't work. We learned a lot of interesting things about kind of where we get the best bang for our buck. Not surprisingly, it is by directing people who participate on Stack Overflow and have accumulated some rep there. But the site's great. We're pleased with it. The best sign of this particular site is I don't know what the hell they're talking about. I don't know if you do, Joel, as a aircraft enthusiast.
But... Well, here's a question about where do pilots sleep on the airplane? That's a good question. I can understand that one. Got a little picture of a little pilot bed.
I feel like I have a fundamental misunderstanding of what pilots do.
Oh, wow.
Is that possible?
No, you know, let's say that you have a long-haul flight, and you got to have some pilots that are working and some pilots that are sleeping and resting for
that. That is a good question. Yeah. There's like a picture of some like secret bunks for the for the pilots.
I think that's a 777, but some planes actually have a little bit of space where there's some beds dashed away that's actually above the cabin. Like in the, you imagine how the round airplane, the top of the cabin is flat, so there's like a little arc section above there where you can dash some beds.
Like where a trucker would climb up on a big rig.
No, those are usually behind the seat, aren't they?
I don't know. Some
depends,
I think they're
on
up
the
over
big rig,
the,
I guess.
I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. This is another topic I know nothing about.
We should have truckers.stackexchange.com.
Okay.
My dad's got 1,200 rep on aviation.
Wow.
Really? The
skipper. This is actually going to be good. This is going to bring in some people
we've
that were not.
We've got you people internally, too, who are really excited about it. Our own Brett Copeland.
Our own Brett Copeland is a pilot.
Yeah.
He flies things. It's a thing.
But yeah, that's why it's doing fantastic. I've got big hopes for it. So Code Golf, back to Code Golf.
So explain what Code Golf is, Jay.
So Code Golf and programming puzzles, this is something people wanted to do on Stack Overflow. I think had some fun with it, where people would basically put out a challenge and they'd say, come up with a piece of code. It's got to be in one of these two languages and it has to output this type of picture, string, whatever. And you can't type the letter L. That's probably a bad example. I am not the kind of person who should be on the Code Golf site.
Well, what Code Golf is, you know, Code Golf is. Code Golf is specifically the kind of puzzle where you're trying to make it as short as possible. So your score is how many characters you used, and it's golf because lower number is better.
That's how golf works, I've heard.
Yeah.
But this is another site that sort of was born out of something that people wanted to do in Stack Overflow, but the community on Stack Overflow was not very welcoming of. And it's one that I think had an engaged, kind of happy community that was on probably on the smaller side, but was really... They were challenging each other. They're having a lot of fun. I grabbed a couple of like random questions to give good examples. CodeGolf.StackExchange.com/questions/6043.
Whoa, say that again.
6043.
Yep.
Is a fun one. Where the title is, we're no strangers to Code Golf. You know the rules, and so do I. It's a sort of...
They don't have good titles on that site.
It took me a second. It's a Rickroll. It's a Rickroll Code Golf challenge. And you have to output the lyrics, which are provided. I'll link to them. The lyrics to Never Gonna Give You Up without using any
external
resources.
The only Rick Astley song that matters.
And then people basically provide their implementation and often they write up how they did it and what they did it. And often the people will literally go through iterations. They kind of play it out. And, you know, we tend to go, oh my God, well, whose problems are these really solving? And the answer is they're not. They're not that. They're challenges. They're people who basically are either enjoy this or are learning and want to do something sort of other than, you know, bang through a book or a lesson. They want to try to kind of play a game and see how well they can do it and challenge themselves. And it's going really well. One more example, and then I'll talk a little bit about how it's popped recently. Another one of my favorite questions, very timely, codegolf.sexchange.com/questions/18986. That's 18986. Is a challenge to draw the Olympic Games logo.
With all five rings.
With all five rings. Oh, wow. Cheap shot. It's so true. That poor guy running the $6 billion machine that made that snowflake turn. Okay. And you've got to write a program that spits out the Olympic rings in a way that is recognizable. And it's, again, it's the shortest code challenge. And there's a bonus for the correct colors. And people do it in all these different crazy ways. So the one that was, this is a creativity challenge, I think. So it had to, it was both, no, this one's not, this one's straight up shortness. But the winning entry on this was written in BASIC on a Commodore 64 emulator.
Yes.
And it is awesome. It is hilarious. It actually draws them, it draws them in front of you in color.
It's got an animated GIF as the answer. It's
fantastic.
GIF? I don't know.
It's the first time I saw code on one of our sites that I could basically follow, because BASIC is the last language I think I learned. And it also reminded me of the Epics Summer, Winter, and World Games series that I played quite a bit on my Commodore 128 as a boy. It really took me back.
Wow.
But,
did you just say Commodore 128?
Yeah.
Was that a thing?
Yeah.
The Commodore... We had everybody I know had Commodore 64s. You were obviously one of those annoying rich kids.
It is a thing. Commodore 128.
The 128.
It was the upsell. It's like the Apple 16 gig instead of the 8 gig. It costs $400 a year.
I literally did not know anybody rich enough to have a Commodore 128. I hadn't even heard of that.
So yeah, when you grow up with parents who are
surprisingly
teachers
long
and administrators at the Board of Education, you live large.
You do. They probably stole that from a school.
Probably. Wow, yeah. that was an uncalled for accusation.
Sorry.
The 128s. What you did if you had a Commodore 128?
Back to you, Jay.
Is you would boot it up while holding down the 6 or the 4 key every single time, so it would boot up in Commodore 64 mode, emulate the cheaper machine, and you could play all the games you actually cared about.
Like the equivalent of the turbo button later.
There was the only reason you wanted it in 128-bit mode was that you could write twice as many characters across, and so you could you could actually see most of a page.
Oh.
But we digress. I think this is interesting because, again, it's a place where people are able to find something to do when they're trying to learn or play that's really working. And they've actually gotten a ton of traffic recently. One of the things that's happened.
Yeah, it's crazy. If you look at the question list and look at the view counts, some of the top questions has 129,000 views, 90,000 views, 48,000 views. That's unheard of on a small site.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a reason. So
there's a lot more views. They spend a lot more time on each question and they have fewer questions.
There's that. Yeah, that's
because that's just sort of the nature of what they're doing there.
But they're
plus they're all fun questions.
Yeah, and their posts per day was kind of, they were getting a couple of questions each day for a while, and it, you know, that popped up to, got as high as probably around 10, and it looks like it's leveling off a little bit closer to probably 5 or 6 right now. And part of what happened is, we're not going to talk too much about the top bar, because I think everyone's kind of seen it by now, and maybe we'll circle back if there's interesting things to dig into there, but when we changed the top bar and kind of moved all these things around, one of the things that was in the old top bar was up in the, we used to call the multi-collider that had kind of notifications and inbox, which were different, and it had the hot questions in there as well. It got pulled out. We made that into kind of just a straight-up nav, and we needed someone to put the hot questions. And one of the things we'd been talking about for a while was trying to get more interesting network questions more visible, kind of in people's periphery, make people aware of kind of these other cool sites. And that was an old goal, and this was like a new problem, and we kind of said, well, why don't we try to stick in them where people can see them? And Jeremy Tunnel, our product manager, was doing a bunch of work and trying to find places to make these work better. And we put the top hot questions across the network initially in the sidebar of the homepage of sites. So you could kind of, whatever site you were on, you see the most theoretically interesting, and it's actually a pretty good algorithm, I think, for interesting questions in the sidebar there. And people clicked the hell out of them. We actually, people going from one site to another site jumped about 300% on those pages. And so we started expanding to other pages. So it's on question pages too.
Do you have any idea what that is in real numbers?
What is in real numbers? The number of clicks?
300% of, you know, 5 is not that impressive.
That's true. I should have asked them that when they told me during the executive status meeting.
Give Joel follow-up questions for me, Tim.
Oh, sorry. I should.
Hell, man.
I shouldn't have asked.
Pull it up. Site switch. There's 3 zeros at the end of it.
Whatever you do, don't mention the name of the tool you're using.
Oh, we call our internal event tracker, and testing.
We made a replacement for Mixpanel. For our purposes, it doesn't do half of what Mixpanel does, but does everything we need.
When Mixpanel wasn't quite working for us, and I think David or Jeremy, someone said, you know what, we're just going to build it internally so it understands our events and all this stuff.
26,000.
Yeah.
Per day.
Yeah, from like 5.
Quite a few clicks.
So what we realized was we basically have a lot of really, really interesting content on other sites than the one someone is on that people are just never exposed to. And so we've been doing a whole bunch of things to keep kind of trying to make it get even better, make it more visible, mix up the questions. Some people are complaining that they loved it. We're seeing the same questions every day.
Oh, 45,000. I'm sorry. 26,000 was the number of users. 45,000 clicks.
So those are now randomized. People see kind of more different, interesting things. But anyway, there's a whole bunch of sites that I think had relatively small audiences that were going there every day, but had really good content and kind of cool stuff had been created over the years and popped up regularly. but they just didn't get a lot of traffic. Code Golf is one of those great examples where you'd see, like, you know, make the Olympic rings in as few characters as you can, would click through and then play and then do it. And one of the cool things we've seen is almost all of the actions we, if people aren't just looking, the downstream actions we care about are all up meaningfully. So the people who go there are not only going, huh, that's neat, they are voting on those sites, which always makes us a little nervous. You got someone coming in who might be outside the community voting on some big popular question.
Yeah, I bet you that makes the mathematicians happy.
You know, I think...
The mathematicians don't get so many clicks in the sidebar.
Well, I think Math Overflow, it wouldn't work well because we just know statistically that if you were qualified to opine on Math Overflow, you'd already be on Math Overflow.
Oh my God, I can't believe you just said statistically.
And
opine in the same sentence.
You are literally, I think, by the time we dig us out from the trouble of you're using the word statistically in that sentence about Math Overflow.
I just want
to
take
first,
it back.
First, we have to decap from that, and then we will uncover the wound of our inflicting lots of non-PhDs on their website to vote on their precious
site.
Questions, which require at least PhD-level knowledge.
I actually think Math Overflow is the only site we don't show the hot questions.
Do we actually, remember how there was discussion when
Math Overflow
joined the network of not having the 100 reputation carryover? I think we decided it could.
We decided it could. We
no
left
deal.
It open if it became a problem
yeah, we
to,
said
to get rid of it.
You're referring to the 100 reputation bonus you get on any site once you've reached 200 rep on some other site, right?
Yes, and the Math Overflow people originally were
concerned
that there was an issue that people could be appearing to have mathematical knowledge when they merely had, let's say, code golfing knowledge or some other.
So Math Overflow has not been a big problem because everyone who goes there realizes that they don't speak any of the language that is there and leaves,
right.
I think. It hasn't been a big issue. It's also the only site we don't show other, they didn't want their PhDs distracted by other sites' questions, so we don't show it on that site.
Absolutely.
But the math site, mathematics.stackexchange.com or math.stackexchange.com, frequently is in the sidebar. And awesome, there's actually, we'll talk about that site one day in depth. They have awesome, interesting questions, even if you're not a real mathematician, like I'm not. But so Code Golf got a ton of traffic from that. And one of the things we are seeing is it's not just voting, which could be good, but could not be good. People are answering. So we're seeing a significant, depending on how we slice it, I think it's safe to say somewhere between 11 and 15% more answers as a function of the traffic that is sent from one site to another, which is pretty awesome. So, you know, maybe the answers on average are not quite as good quality as people who are always hanging out there, but these are people who get into these sites and actually see questions they feel like they can participate on, learn about a new community, and touch stuff, which is really pretty cool. So check out Code Golf and Programming Puzzles. It's a pretty interesting site if you want to try some challenges and write some code or come up with weird things to try and make other people
Okay. All right, we got to do this podcast more often because I having 4 months of new
a lot of new
to talk
sites.
About.
There's too many exciting things.
Kind of boring.
Should have saved some for next time because
next
we won't
week
be
we're
launching
not gonna have any.
Eight between now and the next podcast.
Yeah,
we'll have plenty to talk about next time.
Well, with this other stuff that we're doing here, what other stuff are we doing? We got the Android, we got the iPhone.
I think we should talk about the Stack Overflow in Portuguese side a little bit.
Portuguese,
and we'll talk about Android next time because it's another big exciting one.
But if you want the Android app, it's available on Google Play. Just search Stack Exchange.
Yeah, everybody should go download the Android app if they have an Android device.
Even if you don't have an Android device, you could get an emulator just to, you know, try it.
One day in the future, you will actually have an Android, like an actual humanoid robot who stands next to you. And when we can download Stack Overflow for Androids, not like the bogus little telephone Android thing, then you'll just be able to say, hey, C-3PO.
You'll be upgrading its brain.
You'll be able to say, hey, C-3PO, where do pilots sleep on long-distance flights? And C-3PO will say, there is a pilot's rest area.
Here's a picture, and it'll project a picture onto the wall in front of you.
Well, actually, it's sort of
I think you're hologram.
It'll just morph
be like
into.
A hologram.
Oh, it's a hologram.
It's
I thought it was
a
physical
hologram
Android.
That
oh, it'll project
it.
Oh, that's right. It projects the hologram.
This
that
is,
was R2-D2,
yeah,
to be
this
clear.
This is ridiculous, because it's R2-D2 who does the projections.
C-3PO never demonstrated any holographic projection abilities.
This is why you guys can't go on our droid site. It's just...
Point is, these are not the droids you're looking for.
But so we talked a little bit before we had Gabe on, you may recall, and we talked a little bit about why we were excited
really?
About...
on the podcast?
We did. Yeah. About launching...
When he was here?
He was in New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we talked a little about why we were excited about the site, but we've launched it. We basically...
It is there now. It took us a long time. Everybody was like, this is going to take forever.
And it did. This was the project that Joel has been talking about localizing the code base since what?
Probably on the podcast.
Probably
since
like
2011.
Month three.
I know it was 2011 because I remember Jeff saying, we're going to localize in 2012.
Yeah.
2012 is going to be the year of localization.
It was always the project we punted down the road.
Because for Jeff, until... 1 year was infinity.
that's right. 6 to 8 weeks is we're going to do that.
now.
Yeah, we're doing that. And we're doing a big project.
Right. It's like the difference between status planned and status deferred.
Right.
Status planned means we're going to do that sometime
in
the next 6 to 8 months.
Status deferred is.
Status deferred means good idea.
My successor
but
will probably do it if you can talk him into it.
Maybe in 20 years.
Yeah.
So we finally localized the site, and it did take forever. Jeff was right. Everyone knew it was going to be painful, and it was painful.
Uh-huh.
But we did it.
It wouldn't have been painful if we had done it in 2011 when we only had a quarter as many strings.
Well, partly, but also we would have paid the pain as we went instead of paying it all at once. So we finally did it. We launched the site.
Yeah.
It's got 1,304 questions right now.
Yeah, the site.
No, it has 1,304 preguntas.
Preguntas. And
like us, we should just not try to say Portuguese.
Yeah. The big thing I struggle with whenever I get the Google translation is the gender pronouns. When someone's talking about a question, they're like, she is great or he is great. Like, everything has a gender, and it's very disorienting
for
an English speaker. But anyway, so we launched the site. I think we talked a little bit before about one of the things we really wanted to do, because we've never done, obviously, a site that is a topic in a foreign language. We've tried sites like the Italian site, where someone is trying to learn a foreign language, but this is our first time. And obviously, it's program. It's kind of our core. And so one of the things we really wanted to do was start a little bit more like how Stack Overflow started, and start from an approach of saying, let's focus on things that are relevant to programmers and programmers' jobs, but let's not assume that everything that is not allowed on Stack Overflow needs to be not allowed here. And I think we've learned two different kinds of things in the past. Some are things that our engine is just not great at or struggles with.
Yeah.
And some things are just things that are problems at great scale. And we don't always know which are which. We know which things became a problem for the Stack Overflow community, but it doesn't mean they would become a problem for a community that is not as big, or even one that grows as big and simply has a different base, who's interested in different things and more or less open to certain kinds of topics.
It's likely that the spectrum of software development work that's done by people who speak Portuguese in, like, i.e. in Brazil, includes different technologies and is slightly different. Not
right.
Dramatically, but, you know, it's probably like 10% different than what happens among English language communities. So you might see, for example, like far more corporate development and less product development. You might see certain technologies that just never caught on there, certain technologies that bizarrely did catch on because some famous professor taught it in some school there, and might be a slightly different set of questions appropriate there.
Right. And so part of what we wanted to do was sort of start with a cleaner slate and say, obviously there's things that we just think are nonsensical and have no answer, but within kind of the realm of what feels reasonable, to start from the approach of let most things go. And what we're going to watch really carefully for is what becomes a problem, what starts being a weed that's in everybody's way or is creating arguments, and then we'll kind of slice those things off as we need to. But to really let the site grow into what that community ultimately kind of works well with, that may or may not be the same and probably won't be exactly the same as what Stack Overflow grew into. And it's going wonderfully. One of the things I think we've been working hard at is working with. We have some great experienced users from SO who are on the site and really kind of functioning as great leaders. There's a ton of new people coming in, which is really exciting. And I think one of the things that, you know, we continue to discuss, and of course it's challenging. Gabe is really leading the charge for us because he speaks Portuguese and none of us do, is people are really trying to think ahead of, like, oh my gosh, what's going to go wrong? And so a lot of the more experienced users are actually quite reasonably and responsibly going, we've got to stop this now. And we're trying to find a lot of places to say, you know, you may be right that we need to stop it eventually. We just don't know yet. And we're going to take it slow, and we're going to kind of let them try things and then address problems as they come up.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is just kind of a general question that we've been thinking about for all Stack Exchange sites. You know, we feel like we learned a lot of lessons with Stack Overflow as it grew, right? Things that worked and things that didn't work, and types of questions that couldn't be allowed because they would overrun the site and lower the quality and drive away the experts. But there's some question as far as to sort of when you need to institute those rules, right? Because Stack Overflow had much looser rules when it was young and growing and so on. And it's, you know, it survived, did okay. It got bigger, they became more of a problem. But the attitude at the beginning was, it's okay to have some joke questions, but as long as it's not like every other one.
Yeah.
So
have we talked about the Judaism site on that issue?
No, I don't know anything about the Judaism site.
Wow, you're really willfully ignorant about
Jewish
issues.
What I was saying. So the question is, are we in the situation where we've learned these lessons and we just don't want to repeat past mistakes on new sites? And so we want to go in and say, look, guys, we've learned these lessons. Make sure you follow this, you know, follow this kind of pattern. And we've seen this problem before. Just stop before you go down that road. Don't go that way. That way lies death. Do it this way. Or is this things that we know that break as a site grows, at which point we should say, start with the loose rules, and then as the sites get bigger, gradually start to say, okay, well, at this size, you probably need to start not allowing so many joke questions, or even just wait until the joke questions become a problem on a site. A joke question may not be the right example there. Like, recommendations is an interesting one.
I think that's right. That's the sort of core way to think about it that we're using now on newer sites. I think there's also a longer-term question of which of the problems, even at scale, are problems less because the thing that was being done is fundamentally bad or not good for our system or not good for our community than that it got in the way of the main thing. When I think about things like, you know, library recommendations and things programmers need, I think the fundamental problem wasn't that they stink or they harm people. It was that they overran the hard, more important questions that we were trying to deal with. And so I do dream long-term of a way that these things could live closer to Stack Overflow, but not get mixed up in kind of the core, more important product. But well, you're talking about the fun
that's
thing.
That's separate.
Some sites have done, like the Judaism site does a really, really cool, a lot of these things we found that if they control it, so it goes back.
Oh, are you talking about Purim Torah?
Yeah.
They just have a tag for it, basically.
Some short example everyone can relate to is the Apple site allows what is like your favorite feature about blah, 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 twice a year when there's a new iOS release and a new OS X release. And that's it. And it's a community wiki, so no one gets wrecked.
We did very early on in this podcast, a long time ago, back in the days of me and Jeff, when we were talking about joke questions and so on, we said that there are a couple of things from anthropology that we learn for building Stack Overflow, Stack Exchange. And we specifically spoke about a thing called a rights of intensification.
Right.
Rights being R-I-T-E-S, yep. Not rights like R-I-G-H-T-S. Rights of intensification, which is an anthropological term for times when the normal rules don't apply, but it's usually certain times of year. So it's almost always described as a holiday or a fiesta or something where, for example, in Purim, you're actually required to get drunk, the Jewish festival of Purim.
And you can wear a funny pointy hat, right?
You can, but you are bizarrely required to get drunk.
That would be a great time to introduce Joel to our beer site.
So it's a very upside down holiday where it's sort of like, you know, black is white and white is black kind of holiday. But any holiday is a rite of intensification where rules are with. And so the idea that every culture needs to have rules, but also needs to include within it certain times when the rules are upended in some way or certain rules are ignored or whatever is common to all cultures. And therefore, it would be bizarre if we didn't allow that on the exchange. So you could see that on the Apple, as you described, and also in the what they call Purim Torah on the Judaism.Stack Exchange. And in the early days on Stack Overflow, that was sort of okay for like the joke questions. We were like, okay, people can ask them occasionally. But the trouble is you can't go tell 6,000 people, well, now is not that occasion.
Right.
You have to have a rule.
So anyway, we want to continue to try to figure out how to give people a little bit of that leeway where it works. Back to the Portuguese site, we had a private beta. It was phenomenal. We had a ton of people participating who were just great. Yeah. And then I opened up the public beta a little over a week ago. And it's been phenomenal. It's one of our most successful launches. It was, depending on kind of which number you look at, it's fifth or sixth in activity of all of our sites for its first week of public beta, including the Trilogy. So really, really strong performance out of the gate.
It was fourth.
Web apps.
Oh, it was the Trilogy
very
and then
early
web,
sites.
Web apps? Good Lord.
So there's a little bit of a skew. I think the earliest
it's
sites.
Just the first four.
They got more attention.
Yeah, the earliest sites launched.
So it was like a big deal when we launched. And I think we blogged about it and everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's taken off phenomenally well. And I think what's good, we also said, you know, it's don't worry about Stack Overflow and what's there. This is your site. The point of this is to kind of create these assets in.
You've said that five times on this
in
podcast
Portuguese.
Itself.
But what I'm getting at here is actually not that it's okay to take a question that's been asked before on Stack Overflow and ask it here. It was that people didn't focus on that, which I think was great. So there's a couple of cases where like a really canonical, wonderful question. Someone said, we've got to get this here and worked on them. But for the most part, people are really putting up problems that they've run
they're
into.
Actually
yeah, which is great. There's a real sense of community. And I think, you know, even when sometimes we find ourselves debating with some of the top users saying, no, don't worry about it. You know, ask, answer, enjoy yourselves. Don't stress about this. I love how passionate they are. They care about the site. They're building their own community. One interesting thing we found was when we announced it and we put up a blog post, probably irritatingly to people in English, put up a blog post in Portuguese because we were announcing it really to the Portuguese-speaking community. We got a ton of great feedback from Brazilian developers, from developers in other Portuguese-speaking places like Portugal. Fewer from Angola, but some.
Really?
No, I made that up. We didn't get any from Angola. I mean, we've gotten users, but no comments. And a lot of enthusiasm. There was really an interesting dialogue, I think, that...
Jay, can you name all the 16 Lusophone countries?
There's Brazil. There's Portugal. There is the Olympic Village places.
Is it really 16? It's probably less than that.
Oh, the island, eight, the island of Sodor. The island of Sodor, I think. They.
You mean East Timor?
Oh, no, I was thinking of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Cape Verde. Guinea-Bissau, Mozambique.
Canada? I think Canada.
Oh, Mozambique. Mozambique's a real one.
Macau.
Don't they speak Portuguese in Canada?
I don't know which of those are real countries. But there was an interesting reaction from two other groups that I didn't exactly take us by surprise, but it was a little more vehement than I guess I thought, which was we talked a lot and we were concerned about, we're always worried about splintering, right? Our goal has always been to try and bring a lot into one place.
One place and not have it.
All right, we want canonical answers. And in this case, our take was we concluded there were a meaningful number of people out there who simply aren't at a level they're comfortable participating in English. We talked about that with Gabe, so I don't want to belabor it.
Okay.
But there was a lot of a reaction from sort of English speakers where the thought was essentially all programmers speak English, which I think we're pretty confident is simply not true. There was also, I thought, an interesting, I almost like this. There were a number of people basically saying, you know, English isn't my first language. I wanted to become a serious programmer. And so I mastered programming and I mastered English. And that's great. And it helps me in a ton of ways. And everyone should do that.
Everybody should do that. And therefore, this site is bad because all these people are just the lazy people.
Well, it wasn't that. It was not that mean.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit of, I think there was a lack of appreciation for, in some ways, one, how special those people are. Not everyone can do that. And also just how driven they were. And part of the thing that I think.
You may be overestimating how honest they are about what their native language is.
That could also be true.
I think one of the things is the driven thing is interesting, right? One person in the blog comments even said that, you know, they quoted something about some guy who learned a language so he could be a pilot. He had to learn some language.
They all have to learn English to talk on.
I don't know.
It's actually funny.
But anyway.
I've been listening to air traffic control from around the world using
a lot of aviation.
It's really sort of humorous because they do, the air traffic control is in English everywhere in the world. And when you sit there and listen to air traffic control for like the Tokyo approach or whatever, it's extraordinarily hard to understand what anybody is saying except for the occasional American pilot because it's such heavily accented English that it is practically its own language.
So, okay. The point in the blog comment was that this person
you
wanted
have been
to
listening
be
listening to Stack Exchange
no,
podcast
come on.
Number 55.
The point in this comment was that the person wanted to be a pilot so badly that they learned English, right?
Sure.
And therefore, we should keep programming discussion
exclusive.
In English because that will motivate young programmers to learn English and therefore be
that.
Better programmers, which misses, well, I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, I guess it's a particular kind of idealism, which is, wouldn't the world be a better place if we all spoke English and if everyone wanted so badly to be a programmer that they just learned English as part of that, which you could say maybe that's true, but it's just not realistic.
It's not wildly far off from saying, if we really want to address the poverty problem, we should take more things and only make them available to rich people. So people are more remote. Like there's a weird.
Yeah, and we have somebody here who says that.
There's a
weird lack of, I don't know. It's not realistic. The fact of the matter is that there are programmers who do not speak English who don't, for one reason or another, are not capable or not interested in learning English and or just not at the point yet in their English where they're comfortable participating.
Check out,
in English
everybody
and
should go check
learn.
Out the blog post, blog.stackoverflow.com. Jay wrote it. It's we'll link to it in the show notes. It's basically why can't we all be reasonable and speak English? And it's sort of the reasons why we decided that we, it really does make sense to have Stack Overflow in some other languages, especially the languages where the people don't speak much English. And we should have, before you posted this blog post, it's already got 40 comments, but Jay, before you posted this, we should have done a little bingo card of all the things that we knew that people were going to say, which were wrong. And there's certain things that they reliably get wrong, especially monolingual English speakers. For example, monolingual English speakers tend to assume that Google Translate works, even though every time they try Google Translate, it produces 80% gibberish that they can only mostly understand.
A great exercise along those lines is go to the Portuguese site, open it in Chrome so it translates for you, and pick a post where you want to reply to a comment thread.
Okay.
I have this scenario all the time. I can't. You cannot translate what you're trying to say. It's not possible. I have to give it to Gabe and ask if he can write that for me.
Because it's mechanically impossible with Google Translate or because it's just not going to come
so
out
you
right?
You get a translation that gives you enough of a feel to understand a lot
what
of the core
about.
Content. And questions and answers, you're like 80% it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Especially on programming. It's like tech topics. But when you get into the comments where someone, like you literally don't know if someone is agreeing with you or making fun of you.
Yeah.
Because you can't read it right.
Right.
Like the translation misses the tone.
The stuff.
And so.
Leaves out a few words. Then the other, so that was number one on the bingo card. Number two on the bingo card is, but wait, the programming languages use English. So you must know English if you.
That's one of my favorites.
And there's still a lot of people that still somehow think that that's actually.
I know. This one drives
case.
Me crazy because it's not. The words are English, but they don't mean anything like function.
Function is a common programming term that looks like English, but it doesn't have anything to do with the English meaning of function, or very little.
Right.
Or like method.
These
method
are
also has,
like the,
it just has nothing to do with
sushi or something.
This is why so many programmers I know from other countries spell image IMG. It always confused me. I never understood what they were doing.
And even if you learn every keyword and you know what it means in English, congratulations. Now you know, 40 words in English. Good luck having a conversation with those 40 words.
Yeah, the next thing is actually that even if you are mostly, I don't want to say fluent in a language, but if you're highly proficient in a language, people don't seem to realize that you're still going to participate far less in that linguistic community than if you're fluent. So everybody's given this example of Mats as sort of a famous Japanese programmer, and his English is really very good in written English and acceptable in spoken English, but it's not quite fluent, and he participates a lot less in conversations in English than somebody would in his position if they were 100% fluent, and the same is true of many other developers who've had to learn English. They're not going to jump in on every conversation they can add something to. If they see a question they think they can answer, they may not jump in with an answer because they may not know it. The other fallacy, this should have been on the bingo card, but it's a lot more subtle, was why don't you just give me a translate button so that we can take the work that's happening in English and then optionally translate some of it? And I think that's partially a misunderstanding of what we're doing here. What we're doing here is trying to build a community, not necessarily providing a bunch of questions and answers in every language. And so if something has been asked in English, answered in English, and both of those have been translated to Portuguese, still not that useful, because as a Portuguese user, when you read those, you can't comment, can't respond to the original person.
Is this still true since the most recent release? Things like that. There's no way to...
You want to add your comment, and it's essentially going into another... Or you're making work for somebody else who now has to literally sit there and translate everything that you do.
And we didn't reject that stuff out of hand. We
thought about it a little bit.
And we talked at length about, you know, we want to build these communities. We want to give people from Portugal and Brazil and places their own community. But we also said, could we bring more information to more people if we also, like, what if we took our top questions? And what we realized quickly is, even if you take our, you know,
top 1,000 questions.
It covers such a small percent of the consumption.
Nothing.
Yeah. And we think about whether someday there's a way to link questions. So you can basically say you landed a question in Portuguese, and if we know it's on the English site, it basically says there are additional answers on the English site. Our belief is that most of these communities will get the best answers on both sites. But if we could point one to the other someday, I think that would be interesting. And people talked about that in the comments, and we talked about it here too. It's not that easy to solve, I think. And to your point, these sites are most valuable when you can interact, when you can ask questions and clarify and adjust for your specific situation. But we're really excited about it. I think what we're seeing clearly here from the activity is there are people who needed this, and a meaningful, over a third of the posts we're seeing are from people we've never seen before, who are not active on the other sites. There's a good group of people who know how we work, and there's also, I think we're quickly getting into people that didn't have a resource before they felt comfortable using. So really exciting.
Dude, this has been really long. Can I just end it now?
I think, as long as we're going to have another one 3 years from now,
yeah,
I think we can
another one
we
3 years
see.
From now. So why don't you make it? You've been listening to Stack Exchange Podcast, episode 55, from February 13, 2014. This episode of the Stack Exchange Podcast has been brought to you by the city of Sochi, Russia, on the shores of the Black Sea. Don't forget, when you go to Sochi, to visit the friendship tree that grows in the Friendship Tree Garden. On behalf of producer Abby, audio editor David Greenlee, and now cleaning up the garbage in the conference room after the podcast, ex-producer Alex, Jay Hanlon, David Fulton, and myself, I'm your host, Joel Spolsky. Goodbye. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
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 Like one word in 10 you can make it.
Morning, Nisky 51, Tokyo Control, send by Brainbreak News, position Ninja 01, Commonwealth Test Level 300.
Flight level 300, Ninja 01.
Oh, it's an American pilot, yay!
Commonwealth Test Level 400, Vicra Direct Tome.
In this episode, we discuss the importance of bringing Stack Overflow to other languages, and then Joel plays other languages and screams and cheers whenever he hears an American speaking English.
No, this is English. That's the whole point.
Oh, this is so relaxing. I don't feel like I'm running at all. This is more like, this
actually,
is like...
I'm pretty sure I've had a massage while, like, Chariots of Fire was playing.
That Alex, like if we could go music. One day without you talking about a massage in the workplace, that'd be fantastic. Just one.
Oh, that's an even better implication for the reason why Alex had to be disciplined. Inappropriate comments in the workplace.